The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salner & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Salner, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Well, hello and welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show EDU edition for this week. So we're going to approach the EDU show today in a way we do periodically, where we're going to take a look at an article about retirement planning. This particular article was sent to us by a listener. So this is a suggestion from a listener. And it's an article that a company called Boldin, B-O-L-D-I-N, who's a company that produces some retirement planning software that's available to both individuals and advisors can use it as well, working for their own clients using their software. They apparently have a podcast, and on that podcast, they chatted with the fairly famous person in the world of finance, Robert Merton. So Robert Merton, for those of you who are unaware, he's a American economist that is a Nobel Prize winner in economics. I think he's a professor currently at MIT, but might have retired. He's 81 or so at this point. So, might not still be in a practicing professor, but very famous. Probably his number one claim to fame is his participation in with Fisher Black and Myron Scholes, the Black-Scholes-Merton model for options pricing, which back in the 1990s kind of revolutionized how the world prices financial options. So he came in and helped Black and Scholes kind of put the finishing touches or polished up the model. So pretty significant contribution to the world of finance. So that's who he's talking about. And Robert Merton, from time to time, talks about his views on retirement, actually, probably of his age. He's been a practicing retiree, I would assume, at the age of 81. But Boldin interviewed him on their podcast and released an article kind of summarizing that conversation. And Jim and I are going to walk through this and talk about elements that we kind of agree with or support in our process and approach and philosophy, and maybe chat a little bit about things that we might disagree with in it. So we tackle one of these articles from time to time on these EDU shows, and that's where we're headed today. So, Jim, now that I've set that all up, this article was sent to you first, so you forwarded it to me 10 minutes ago or so, so I've glanced at it a little bit. I've heard or read Robert Merton share the views that are in this particular article previously, so I kind of get where he's coming from. But since you brought the article to my attention, I'll let you kind of lead the charge on here.
As you were doing this intro, I started thinking, we've talked about articles from Merton before.
Yeah, he from time to time shares his thinking, yeah.
I might be lousy with names and pronunciation in the English language in general, but bizarrely, I can kind of remember the most obscure things. I just don't remember when we spoke about an article, but it was at least one, maybe two articles on past shows, because we were actually talking about Black Scholes and how he was part of that. So, unfortunately, I don't know if there's any way we could actually find his other articles that we referenced. But as you were talking, I was sitting here thinking, it didn't dawn on me when I first read this article, but definitely I know we've talked about some of Merton's articles before.
Yes, we have this one. This isn't an article he released directly. This is essentially a recap of a conversation he had on the podcast. So Bolden must have invited him to come on their podcast to talk about his thoughts on retirement planning. And I'm assuming, although I've skimmed but not fully read the article, I'm guessing Bolden would have only done that if their planning software kind of worked, similarly to Robert Merton's thinking. You wouldn't bring somebody on to blow a hole in your approach. So I'm guessing that Bolden takes an approach that's consistent with Robert Merton's thinking on retirement planning.
I would assume the same thing. We're not familiar with the Bolden software, but I do thank the client, excuse me, not a client, the podcast listener who sent this article. And I might have been in the kitchen grabbing an iced tea when you were doing the intro. Did you mention to people that they're welcome to send articles for EDU shows?
No, not directly. So that's
Okay.
a good point.
Do you want to mention it?
Well, you seemed excited to do it, but I'll mention it.
No,
Feel free
you
to
can
send
steal
us
my thing.
articles. Yeah, if you read something you find interesting that obviously we kind of swim in the pool of retirement planning, so it's got to be retirement planning related, but if it's something that you think would be valuable for our listeners and you'd be interested in hearing our thoughts, kind of breaking down what's in the article, feel free to send us suggestions. We're more than happy to consider. It's kind of a variation on sending us questions for the Q&A show.
Yep,
So,
can't promise we'll get to every single article,
yeah.
but I appreciate the people who do send one. I have a little folder on my computer under the email. It's called EDU Articles, and I just kind of drag the emails into there. And when we have to do a podcast, we want to kind of break it up a little. So this is an article podcast, and that's where I go.
Perfect.
All righty. So let's jump into this. I will spare people updates of things going on. Although I will say, no, I'm not going to spare people. This is being recorded well in advance, right? Because this plays next week, even though it's this week.
Yeah, so we're recording this on August 1st. New set of big, beautiful tariffs released today. But if anything happens of significance in the world between August 1st and August 6th, when this will play, we won't be mentioning it because we don't have a crystal ball. So just be aware that I'm going to be unavailable next week to record the show normally when we do it, which is usually the day before it releases. But just in case,
No problem. So we just like to
hopefully
let
the
people
world is
know.
calm and uneventful over the next several days.
Right. But if it all went to hell and we're not talking about it, now you know why.
Yeah, now you know why.
All righty. So let's jump into this. I will have Joe post this article in the show notes, a link to it. And then there's other links within the article to Bolden's website and their podcast and things of that nature. The title is Nobel Prize Winner Robert Merton on Why Retirement Income is More Important Than Retirement Savings. Very good title, one that I believe in. And I think that's why this podcast listener sent it to us. All right, Chris, so I'll do what we normally do. I'll start reading and we'll pause every now and then, say what we agree with. And there's a couple of things in here that I know you will disagree with as well, politely, far be it from us to argue with a Nobel Prize winner, MIT professor. It's just, you
Oh yeah,
can't. I
his
mean, he's
credentials are substantial.
stellar.
Although, the story about long-term capital management, which people can look up, not so favorable. So he's not perfect.
Right? No, he's not. That is true.
Hit the brick wall with the others during that episode of the collapse of the long-term capital management. But sometimes academics putting into practice, they find that the real world is a little bumpier than the road they predicted. And that was certainly an example of that.
I am glad you said that, because that was going to be one of the things, not long-term capital management, but that academics tend to look at things outside of real world. And there's some points in this podcast or this article, excuse me, that I disagree with. And I think it's because it's being looked at academically, not realistically. Mm-hmm. And the best analogy I have for that, folks, is way back when I was going through the police academy. We were taught certain ways to handle certain situations. Here's how you handle this. Here's how you handle that. And you know, Chris, in the controlled environment of the police academy and the role playing, it worked perfect. Go out on the street, not so much.
Yeah.
So when you look at things as an academic in a controlled environment or in some sterile study, works perfect. Go out into the real world where true human behavior and this little thing called life come into play. And you'll realize all these projections that were made, multi-year projections, assumptions. I've said it before and I'll say it again. That and 50 cents won't buy you a cup of tea in China. And Chris hit the ball on the head. I mean, don't say anything. Hit the nail.
They you hit can hit the a nail ball, on the head. The ball goes out of the park. You hit the ball out of the park or hit the nail on the head. Those are similar sayings.
Oh.
Hitting the ball on the head is munging them together in the gym way.
But thank you, Chris. I was conflating.
Yes.
Hit the ball out of the park and hit the nail out of the hit the nail on the head or hit the whatever the hell. Let me just move on. What I'm getting at is Chris said, we don't have a crystal ball. And he went on to describe, you know, about software. And we are constantly asked on the podcast in questions and by clients in real life, why don't you have this, especially on taxes? Why don't you have multi-year projections of how much I should withdraw each year from each style account now until I die? Or why don't you demonstrate to me how much I should be converting the exact dollar amount each year now until my required minimum distributions begin, as well as the next 10 years after required minimum distributions begin? Because that would require a crystal ball, and that doesn't exist. And it wouldn't be worth the paper if you were going to print it nowadays. It's all PDFs, but it wouldn't be worth the paper it was printed on. Any type of software that's attempting to project that. So you often see those in these academic studies where they will take, here's what happened in the past market, and we're going to analyze that. Even though if you go to buy an investment, it's going to say on page one, past performance is no guarantee of future results. And 15 times in this article, we are going to reference that you can't rely on past performance, that we cannot be held responsible for future results. Yet they're going to rely on it sometimes to make some very critical assumptions or decisions. That might work academically and win them accolades and praise and get published in industry magazines and hired to go on speaking circuits. But just as in the police academy, here's how you're supposed to handle this, Officer Solnier. The first time you go into the real world and you start to realize, holy crap, I didn't talk about this in the academy. People don't act like that. And that's the whole problem with retirement planning and financial planning in general, but retirement planning specifically. People expect through software, just because it came out of a computer, it's got to be brilliant. They expect software to be able to make projections that instead need to be analyzed every single year. Okay, I digress. So let's jump into this and see how it goes. So it begins. When most people think about retirement planning, They think about savings goals, investment returns, and net worth. But according to Nobel laureate Robert C. Merton, that's the wrong place to start. The most important question in retirement is it, how much have you saved? It's how much income will you need and how will you generate it? I like that opening. I tend to agree with it to a degree. But yes, how much income you have or how much income you can generate, which comes from assets. So how much you have saved is important. I think it's rather than saying the most important question isn't how much you have saved, a better way of saying is the most important question is how much income will you need and how will you generate it? And that generation comes directly from how much you have saved. I think they could have put both of those together, but I agree with what they're saying. It's the opposite of what you did during the accumulation phase, listeners. Y'all know this. I preach this constantly. Retirement is that Seinfeld episode of The Opposite. Because everything you do in retirement is the total mirror opposite of what you did during the accumulation phase. It's a 180. It wouldn't be a mirror opposite, would it? That was kind of that was not correct verbiage. I understand that, folks, but you get what I mean. It is a complete 180 from when you were saving. So it has little to do, truly, with managing money. When you retire, Wall Street wants you to think it has everything to do with managing money. Doesn't. Has everything to do with generating income. And that I agree with. Anything else you want to add to those paragraphs?
You know, whenever people talk about income, I always think about, you know, income that's kind of like your paycheck, which is, you know, taxable cash flow. So I'd probably nitpick it a little bit and prefer to say, how are you going to generate the cash flows that you need? Because some of it isn't going to be considered income, right? It's going to be return of principal. It's going to be, you know, now some people use the word income to mean all that kind of stuff. So they kind of mash together the meaning of a cash flow versus income. But, you know, technically you need cash flows and you need those because you need the cash to go do the stuff you want to do. The whole reason you amassed money, whether it was in a pension or in a 401k or a brokerage account or a bank account or insurance policy or, you know, however you amassed wealth, you've got to access it. You've got to have it turned back into cash for you to actually use it for the purpose, you know, that was intended, that you saved it for, right? Unless you were just saving it for the sheer joy of saving, never intending to use it. But that's kind of bizarro land, in my opinion. You got to remember why you saved it. And it's, you got to generate cash flows. And you got to have enough of those cash flows for the rest of your life to satisfy, to be able to do all the things that you want to do. And that's, I guess, success in retirement. And it's a big question of where you're going to get those cash flows. They're going to come from assets or they're going to come from some kind of other income source, tax-free or otherwise. But yeah, it's really all about cash flows throughout your life.
Right. Okay, so it continues. On the Bolden podcast, Merton said, quote, "Overwhelmingly, I'm trying to make the case that the thing that matters for retirement is the amount of income you get and not how big your pot is. Those are very different." Again, he is a Nobel laureate and a MIT academic. So far be it for me to disagree. But those, to me, the amount, how big your pot is, directly impacts the amount of income you're going to get. Whether he's clearly, throughout this podcast, they reference income, not solely as Chris described it. I think any cash flow coming in,
yeah, they call it income,
is being counted as income. They're just using the word income, which can cause some confusion, I concede. But as long as we understand when they talk income, they're pretty much talking positive cash flows coming in. Whether those positive cash flows are from a pension, from Social Security, from an annuity, from investments, from dividends, from interest, They're just counting it as all income, not necessarily cash flow. That's just kind of a nuance. But how big your pot is will directly impact how much income, by their definition, you're going to get. So again, Mr. Merton seems to want to put this wall between the size of your portfolio and the amount of income you're getting. I think they are related. They're much more than kissing cousins. They're directly related. They're brother and sister. They go hand in hand. Well, brothers and sisters won't go hand in hand, but they're husband and wife, or husband, wife, wife. They're just spouses going hand in hand. They're that intertwined. Okay. At Bolden, we agree. Retirement planning isn't just about how much you have. It's about how long it will last. And that I agree with. And that means focusing on income planning that aligns with your spending need. Merton argues that retirement income is the most critical financial planning metric. I would like to change that. If it was me, I would have written, Merton argues that retirement income is the most critical retirement planning metric. While net worth and return on investments matter, they don't directly answer the most pressing retirement question. Can you afford to live the life you want for the rest of your life? Here again, I agree but disagree. I agree where it says return on investment. While net worth and return on investment matter, they don't directly answer. I think return on investments doesn't directly answer. It's part of the calculation. But net worth certainly does directly answer the most pressing retirement question.
Well, I think it answers it for a planner.
Live the life you want.
Yeah, Jim, I think it answers it for a planner. I think what they're getting at there is that people, the retiree, easily see, I have this lump, and how does that translate into income every year for me for the rest of my life so that I can actually do the things that I want. There's like a disconnect there. We can connect the dots, right? As planners, that's actually one of the jobs we have as planners is to connect those two together. How is this lump sum that most of you have amassed? How is that actually going to contribute to what they're focusing on here, which is the cash flows you need to live the life you want for the rest of your life, you know, no matter how long you live. Connecting those two together, that's really the world of retirement planning, right? Is how do I take this lump sum and deploy it and achieve all the things that I want to achieve? I think that's what they're getting at, is people have that disconnect, whereas they understand income, right? They're used to living in I get a paycheck, I budget, I can live the life I want because I know that I only spend $8,000 a month, but I get $10,000 a month coming in, so it allows me to save some. That's an easy concept because we've practiced it since we were teenagers, most of us, right? When we first started having income and we had to figure out how we're going to satisfy the things we want to do. But when you hit retirement, then you're no longer, for most people, unless they have a pension, classical pension, they've got a lump sum amount and they've got to figure out how to live, you know, within that. And there's a big gap there. I think that's really what they're focusing on here, is that translation. You and I can translate it pretty easily because we're in that middle space. Retirees have trouble.
Okay, fair enough. I can see. Very good point. Okay, we'll continue with the article. People naturally think in terms of income, as Chris was just alluding to. When asked how much money it takes to live a certain lifestyle, they rarely quote a net worth figure. They talk about income. You need about, and they give examples, you need about $70,000 a year to live like that. My pension covers 2/3 of my salary. Social Security will give me $2,000 a month. Each government program follows this logic. Social Security doesn't give you a lump sum. It gives you a guaranteed monthly income for life. That framing makes it easier for someone to plan, compare, and feel confident. That I agree with. Everything in there. All right, I'm going to skip a little section here with a given example living in a nice little town. Okay, so then it begins. When pensions were the norm, income planning was built in. Mm-hmm. But with the shift to defined contribution plans like 401ks, the focus moved to account balances, saving rates, market return, and net worth. I have shared often, folks, when I was studying financial planning in the early 90s at Boston University, you got to remember, Tom Benya, I'm pretty sure his name is, but I think it is, but Google it. It was just if you don't know Chris, the gentleman, father of the 401k. He's the one who kind of discovered Section 401k. He was working for a bank as a consultant, trying to pass on investment risk, pension risk to employees. And he's the one who first came up with the concept. Hey, I think Section 401k is going to allow you to do this. And he created 401ks. He was the father of it.
Ted is his first name.
Ted. Not Ted. This began with a T. I was close. And three letters. Just I got two-thirds of his name. A third of his name, right? Benya was his last name, wasn't it?
Yeah, B-N-N-A. His last name.
Mm-hmm. Benya? Would that be Benya, not Benya?
I don't. It doesn't have the little tilde above it, so I don't know for sure. I don't know how he pronounces it.
I respect it. Let's move on. Okay. I have shared often that the professors at BU who are teaching us, or the instructors at BU who are teaching us, spoke glowingly of the three-legged stool of Social Security, pension, and savings to support a retirement. And went out of their way to share with us that that was gone because the 401k killed it. 401ks really came into vogue in the mid to late 80s. And by the time I started studying at BU, I think it was around 95, because I passed the CFP exam in 97. By the time I got to 95, they were already growing in popularity, and the thought was they were going to kill retirement, or at least the three-legged stool. But what they did drill into our heads are these metrics. So this article is 100% correct that the death of the pension for most people nowadays, except people who live for legacy employers, more of the blue-collar legacy employers, and government. Those are the two realms that still have pensions. So more blue-collar, heavily unionized, private employment, and government still has pensions. Everybody else, pretty much, you're on your own. And they were replaced with 401k defined contribution style plans. And this part is correct. You start to pay attention to account balances, saving rates, market return, net worth. The problem is, as you enter retirement, you don't give up that frame of thought. And you should, because retirement's the opposite. But you don't, and you continue thinking that way. So the article continues, these metrics matter, but they don't reflect how retirement feels or functions. A large portfolio is only meaningful if it generates enough reliable income to meet your need. And this disconnect creates confusion and often fear. I'll come back to that part. The last sentence says, that's why Bolden, the software program, is designed to flip the script. Instead of obsessing over the size of your portfolio, we help you focus on what it can do, talking about your portfolio, what it can do, support your lifestyle for life. Let me go back to that sentence. This disconnect creates confusion and often fear. Mm-hmm. Here's the cynic in me, folks. The disconnect they're talking about is the disconnect of retirees, where all during the accumulation phase, because of the death of pensions, were taught or learned or read that account balances, saving rates, market return, net worth, these are all the metrics you have to pay attention to. Alden and the Merton gentleman, the retired or current MIT professor Merton, they're arguing, no, it should be income. You should be more concerned about how much income you can generate. And they're saying that this disconnect is causing confusion and fear. This disconnect is specifically designed by my industry. Now, this is the cynic in me, and you can disagree if you're an industry person. I think most VGers who are listening to this, you do-it-yourselfers, you're nodding your head in agreement. I should not try to say words I can't pronounce. By pushing this confusion and this fear that you could outlive your assets, that managing your portfolio is so incredibly complex, that trying to figure out how much you can safely withdraw each year is so incredibly beyond your approach, you have to hire us and pay us an uncapped asset management fee for the rest of your life. You need us. This is too hard to do. And paying us an uncapped management fee because investing is so complex, so difficult to do, especially for retirees. There's no way to simplify this. You cannot outlive your money. You have to know what you're doing. It's way beyond your abilities. You got to pay us. That's the cynic in me. And if you don't believe me, just look at Mr. I hate annuities and so should you. He's essentially saying, I hate a simplified way of you doing your retirement that ages well and takes into account your cognitive abilities will decline, your interest in markets will decline, your desire for simplicity, safety, and security will increase. Nah, you don't want any of that. You want to pay my firm a godly amount of money on an annual basis to put you in a cookie cutter portfolio, even though we're going to tell you it's not, and let us manage it for you, and let us draw money from you. That's my industry in a nutshell. Anyways, I digress on that, but you all know I despise the uncapped AUM approach to asset management, not only in the accumulation phase, but even in the distribution phase. Okay. Anything you want to add, not only in my tirade, but everything else that was written before we move on?
No, I think I'm good at this point.
Okay. So he breaks it down on the podcast in this article. In his Harvard Business Review article, The Crisis in Retirement Planning, Merton offers a three-part model for thinking about retirement income. Now, again, it's really retirement cash flow. Chris is correct, but they're using the word income. So Merton says, category one, they're calling it three bucket. So category one or bucket one, I guess, minimum guaranteed income. Gee, Chris, have you heard of anything similar to that? Maybe something that begins with an S, maybe?
Minimum guaranteed. That sounds fairly secure.
Ah, secure, yeah. I wonder if anyone ever called it secure income. I don't know. Category one, minimum guaranteed income. This is the money you absolutely need to cover essentials like housing, food, health care. Have you heard something similar to that, Chris? Maybe with utilities and transportation? Huh. Have you heard something like that before?
I've heard something similar. Maybe on a podcast somewhere.
Somewhere, yeah, I don't know where. Almost like a minimum dignity floor of food, utilities, transportation, housing, and healthcare should be covered with a lifetime guaranteed stream of secure income. But Mr. Merton continues, it should be guaranteed, inflation protected, and last for life. And now they're quoting from Mr. Merton. It's important for people to start figuring out what income they will have that is inflation protected and guarantees for the rest of their life. This will help protect a retiree from longevity risk, interest rate fluctuations, and inflation, writes Merton.
I'd include, I would add, to him if he was mentioning this, not that I would feel comfortable enough to suggest something to Robert Merton, but not just interest rate fluctuations, but rate of return uncertainty or fluctuations as well, because this income has nothing to do with the rate of return on your portfolio, interest rates, as he mentioned, but that's, it eliminates those things. Longevity risk, because it's guaranteed for life. It's inflation adjusted, so you've got protection from inflation. And then the other piece of uncertainty people worry about a lot in retirement is, you know, the rates of return I'm going to get, which he alludes to maybe with interest rate fluctuations. But I would broaden it a little more with just rate of return fluctuations.
Absolutely. Because the bottomless cup of coffee, which a lifetime stream of guaranteed income is, doesn't stop. It just keeps coming. And it is not impacted by, I'm trying to find an analogy of coffee with investing, but y'all get my point. If you're at a cafe and you get a bottomless cup of coffee, it is just going to keep coming. Outside factors aren't going to impact it. And don't write to me and say they could run out of coffee. I get that. But as long as they don't run out of coffee, you're going to keep getting your coffee. It's the same thing with guaranteed lifetime income. And it is not impacted by your longevity risk. It lasts forever. It's not impacted by changes in interest rates. It's all baked in and guaranteed. It can be impacted by inflation, but it is not impacted either by investment risk either. So Chris is 100% correct because it's fully guaranteed. The insurance company or the government backing the pension or the government backing the pension or Social Security, the company backing your pension, they're all risk pooling. And they give that specifically, Merton says, sources of this income, Social Security, pension, lifetime annuities. Gee, I wonder where we heard that before. Mm-hmm. So perfect. We fully agree with that. The goal of these dollars, Social Security, pension, and annuities, cover your non-negotiable with income that won't go away. Totally agree with that as well.
Right. I like we call non-negotiables. Go ahead. Yeah, we call required expenses or minimum dignity floor expenses. Floor. Yeah.
Here's a tip from the software provider. Oh, no, that's how to use their software. You can read the tips yourself. I'll skip the Bolden tips. That's tips on how to use their software. But then they want to talk a little bit about annuities, or at least Mr. Merton does. And he's, quote, this is a Merton quote, to increase the amount of guaranteed income above and beyond those benefits, the pensioner would have to buy an inflation-protected lifetime annuity from a highly rated and certain insurance company, says Merton. I agree, but that product doesn't exist. Truly inflation adjusted or inflation protected annuities don't exist. He ends up giving an example of a partially inflation protected annuity, but I want to just clear the air here. Prior, just before COVID, I think it was in the year of COVID or the year before COVID, Principal, who was the last insurance company that was offering a 100% inflation-adjusted single premium immediate annuity where they would increase your payment every year by whatever the COLA was, stopped being sold. And it stopped being sold because why, Chris? I'm sure you can figure out why.
Well, it's
all insurance companies dropped it.
Yeah, the cost of hedging that risk and dealing with that just became too immense. The risk was too great on the insurance company, so they were unwilling to make that promise anymore. It really just came down to that.
Even Social Security, folks, never came with an automatic COLA adjustment. It had to be voted on by Congress. And then I think in a shallow attempt to win votes, I forget approximately when, I believe somewhere in the 50s, could be wrong on that, Chris is so curious, but he'll correct me in a second. Congress voted in automatic annual adjustments to Social Security. It used to be about every 5 or so years, Congress would look at it and decide if and how much of a cost of living increase they would give. Now, Congress can get away with this because they theoretically can change the rules on Social Security whenever they want, and they control the purse strings. They can sell more debt in the future to fund Social Security, and sometime between now and the next 5 or 6 years, probably the next administration that takes over from the Trumpster, they're going to have to deal with this. They're going to go down with the ship because they have to make major changes to Social Security, or there will be a cut of 20%+ in people's benefits.
Right.
Now, don't freak out and panic on that. Chris and I firmly believe they will, quote unquote, fix it. And there's a couple of, quote unquote, fixes they can do that will not cause benefit recipients to lose coverage. But that said, the government can give COLA adjustments because they can kind of change the rule and they can print money out of thin air.
Well, it's not too much a stretch for them as long as wages go up consistent with costs, right? Because what's the source of Social Security being able to pay you? It's collections from payroll taxes. So people are being paid more, more gets paid in. And so as long as wage inflation and price inflation are somewhat similar, then it's not really stressful. Insurance companies don't fund it with an automatically inflation-adjusted revenue stream when they're satisfying the payments to you. So it's a whole different model there, much more risky for them. And it was 1975, wasn't in the 50s. It was 1975 that things became on autopilot for cost of living adjustments. Prior to that, it was kind of at the whim of Congress. There wasn't a schedule they were on. It was just after inflation happened for a while, they would vote and do an adjustment is how it happened prior to that. So so now I guess we're celebrating the 50-year anniversary of automatic cost of living adjustments for Social Security.
Absolutely. And I think they happened all the time, past rather. I don't know if they would ever. Would you want to be the congressman going up for re-election who voted no? I'm not going to give a COLA adjustment Social Security. So I think part of the reason they just automated it was, hey, this is a waste of our freaking time. We always approve this.
Right.
So I'm just guessing that that's what they did. So they give an example, though, because there are some annuities where you can pick a fixed rate of adjustment. I wouldn't call it inflation adjustment.
Yeah. A fixed annual increase.
I would call it inflation hedge, but not an adjustment. So he gives an example. Lifetime income annuities offer guaranteed payments for the rest of someone's life. For example, let's say a 60-year-old male purchases a $150,000 annuity today, and this was written in
June of 25.
That was today I printed it. When was this printed? June.
June, yeah.
Okay. Let's say a 60-year-old male purchases a $150,000 annuity today with a 3% inflation protection. If he were to opt to start receiving payouts in 5 years, so he's not buying a single premium immediate annuity, you all know that. He's buying a VERB, he's annuitized, but he's buying a deferred income annuity. So he buys it today at 60, defers it for 5 years. He would get around $700 a month for the rest of his life.
That's their example. We're not vouching for that.
Yeah, so we don't know how accurate these numbers are, but they're making a point. They're claiming that person would get about $700 a month for the rest of their life, growing, obviously, at 3% a year. They're just trying to give an example that there's several ways Chris and I try to provide some inflation hedge. I hate to use the word protection because inflation remains this unknown risk lurking out there. You just don't know how much it's going to be. You try to address it when it comes to income streams as best you can. Some advisors, some very, very competent advisors, preach trying to create a spending ladder of tips. And each year the tips mature, and rather than the money coming from a insurance company, it's essentially coming from the federal government. And that could theoretically work if you had enough money. Single premium immediate annuities or a deferred income annuity, even the withdrawal benefit annuities that we just spent a couple of EDU shows talking about, they all share in something that you can't get at your own through tips, and that's mortality credits, risk pooling. And in the case of withdrawal benefit annuities, as Chris coined the term, he calls it behavioral credits. A lot of people who buy these annuities with withdrawal benefits never cash them in, yet have spent, as we showed on our show in one particular case, over $300,000 of fees, yet maybe they won't even turn the income on. That you can benefit from that because the insurance company anticipates, they call it lapse rate, they anticipate some of that and give you extra money. So the point that I'm trying to make is, and I'm not bashing those who want to try to create this out of a ladder of tips, I find it to be more complex, and many people don't have enough money to be able to do that. But we fully support those advisors, some very, very great ones that I respect, like Roth, and you individuals, you do-it-yourselfers who want to do that. We tend to favor, yes, passing that risk on to an insurance company where you don't necessarily get these behavioral credits. We believe in the annuitized version of these products where you're going to get mortality credits. To adjust those for inflation protection, there's several different steps you can do. And one of them is to choose, in this case, a 3%, which I do favor. Now, there's a lot of studies out, not a lot, but there's a couple of studies. If you Google this, a very intelligent people saying not to do it. Don't buy these annuities with the 3%. It's still going to fail. And they espouse either tips or investments or laddered annuity approach. We favor whatever the people we're working with would favor. Whether they buy laddered SPIAs, and Chris will explain in a second what that means. A SPIA with a, I feel 3% is reasonable because the Fed has said we're going to try to target 2%. Give a little bit of a buffer in there. It doesn't mean every year inflation is going to be 3%. We know inflation was almost 11 on one annualized point in 2023-ish or 2022-ish. In the not too distant past when interest rates started going up really fast. I think that was 2022. But over the long term, over a 5, 10, 20-year retirement, I think saying inflation may average 3%, it's not going to solve and cure. And this is what Alan Roth espouses and why he believes so passionately in tips. His fear is a 1970s or more early 80s style of rampant inflation, very high double-digit inflation for a number of years. He fears that justifiably. But as I said, I personally don't feel a tips ladder is structurally easy for people to do, even with tipsladder.com or whatever that website is. I still feel it lacks mortality credits or behavioral credits and requires more money dollar for dollar, what you might be able to achieve with laddered SPIAs or a single premium immediate annuity with this 3% adjustment. Or a mixture of.
Yeah,
them.
Go ahead. I just want to comment on the 3% a little bit, because remember, we're talking at this point in the article about their non-negotiable expenses, they called it. So the minimum dignity floor equivalent. And we talk time and time again on the podcast that we find, at least the data shows, that if we focus on just those expenses, that we typically are seeing higher than that average 3% inflation rate on those. So if your goal with this income that we're talking about here is to cover those non-negotiables, which the big, you know, the big critter in there that has a lot of the upward pressure on inflation is medical expenses, 3% might not be adequate if that's your goal. You're kind of building in, I'm planning to lag behind what we've seen for the past 10 or 20 years on these particular expenses. Now, when you broaden it to all of your expenses, then that helps drag that average down closer to the 3 number here. But you got to remember that headline inflation that we hear about all the time doesn't necessarily apply to you and your circumstances as a retiree who's likely to face a greater and greater percentage of medical expenses as part of your minimum dignity floor expenses in particular, or, you know, and by extension, all expenses. And medical, you know, has got a lot of upward pressure on the prices. Hopefully that gets resolved over time. My expectation is over the next 10 or 20 years, we're going to see a slowdown of inflation on healthcare because I don't think the rates we've seen are sustainable. But if you're just going with the data, you might want to consider more than three.
You know, I'm so glad you mentioned that. So glad. That totally skipped my mind. We know about this. We've talked about this, but it totally skipped my mind. And it is another of the issues I have with a tips ladder. In addition to, I feel, being unnecessarily complex for 80, 85, 90, 95-year-old to handle. And then if you end up trying to hire someone who's going to charge you 1%, you're going to be giving up 20, 25% of your tips return. It's just ridiculous. But I digress. Beyond that, tips are tied to general CPI. And Chris is 100% correct that your minimum dignity for food, utilities, transportation, housing, and healthcare expenses are, as a subset of CPI, are generally subject to much higher inflationary rates. It's the other elements that we put in fun, if you will, that will bring down the CPI average. But when you look at just those subsets, which make the minimum dignity floor, tying your future spending, your tips ladder to CPI, but trying to use that money to cover what we call your minimum dignity floor expenses, will not keep pace with inflation. You also need additional protections beyond that. It may cover travel and clothing and more discretionary items that don't, excuse me, that don't tend to go up at the same inflationary rates. That's why when we do this, so this is probably going to turn into a two-part podcast. So let's digress a little here, Chris, and dive deeper into this rabbit hole. When we do this, explain to people again how we try to figure out what the embedded, and again, we don't have a crystal ball, so we're using projections. But what we're trying to do is figure out the shortage between a person's anticipated secure income needs and the growth of their minimum dignity floor. That's why as a firm in our process, we have completely broken out two very distinct minimum dignity floor phases. We call it the delay period and the post-delay period. Fairly simple. Delay period is from retirement to when all sources of secure income are turned on. That's usually age 70 because the last source of secure income for many, not all, but many people to be turned on is Social Security. So from retirement to Social Security, we call that the delay period, and we're not talking about that today and next week, and neither are they. They're concentrating on these lifetime unknowns. So we're not even going to address how we handle the delay period. We've done that enough on previous shows, and we'll do it again on future shows. But we also have a number that we look at, and that's called the post-delay. That's when we start to look. All your secure income sources have been turned on. And remember, we feel fairly confident in the number that we're projecting. Are we on the bullseye? No. Are we on the target? Absolutely. Because our definition of secure income, that three-part definition, the first element of it is the amount of income you're going to receive is predetermined and known. There's no ambiguity. And when you're talking about Social Security, pension, and income annuities, you pretty much know what you're going to get. They are all, in the case of annuities, contractually disclosed to you. In the case of a pension, I wouldn't say necessarily contractually disclosed to you, but they are in the pension benefit formula. You work for us X number of years, you're going to get a replacement of X percent of your salary, and you can figure out with a strong degree of accuracy what you're going to get. And the same thing with Social Security until they screw with it in another couple of years. So we feel at the beginning of the post-delay period fairly confident in that initial number. Where the lack of confidence or the uncertainty, not lack of confidence, but the uncertainty begins to come in is how much your secure income will grow. There's some that tell you right off the bat it ain't going to grow at all. Some pensions say we're not going to increase it at all. Some annuities say we're not going to increase it at all. That we're fairly accurate on. It's the potential growth of those outside of an annuity that guarantees a 2, 3, 4, 5, 6% steady return. Outside of that, it can be get a little unknown of how much your income will grow. But where we have the biggest disparity is the inflationary pressures on your minimum dignity floor. Those we do increase at rates of inflation far greater as a percentage, far greater than general CPI's 2.5%, 3% that most advisory platforms use. We will increase certain expenses much higher than that and get almost this weighted inflationary rate weighted against each individual's secure income shortage. I'm going to let Chris take over now and explain how he takes all that information and tries to actually determine, without a crystal ball, what the growth rate of someone's secure income should be, at least on day one, and things will change, so we have to update this on a regular basis, but how we attempt to come up with a more accurate number. Take over, Paul. Chris.
So what this leads to, essentially, to summarize what Jim was saying, is that your secure income sources, Social Security, pension, and income annuities, if you have any, generally the assumption on our end is that inflation is on those, if we know them, might be zero. A few have a stated rate, like there are some pensions that they were going to pay X percent, and that's the deal, and that can be somewhat, you know, pretty well relied on, I would say. Income annuities may or may not have some kind of increase built into them, depends on the contract. Social Security now is kind of a little up in the air because it is based on CPI. Because we feel that Social Security is likely headed for adjustments in the future, one of the assumptions we make is that Social Security COLAs are going to lag CPI just a little bit, because that is one of the numbers they can turn in adjustments to future Social Security, is to adjust how the cost of living adjustment is calculated. And so in anticipation of that possibility, we generally assume a 2% growth rate on Social Security. So given that, secure income likely grows, you know, not a lot compared to your expenses that you're trying to cover, which in our approach are those minimum dignity floor expenses that we first try to cover with secure income. And a lot of people, because medical in particular, can some portions of medical, and we've got research data on this that allows us to assume a reasonable inflation rate on different elements. And when I say different elements, out-of-pocket costs versus premiums for different types of coverage, each have their own inflation rates historically. And we take that, and some of those inflation rates on medical can be 5 to 6% sometimes. And we look at the whole picture of minimum dignity floors expenses. The inflation rate on those oftentimes are 4.2%. Something like that, mostly because medical is dragging up the average of all of them in our assumptions. Okay. These are all assumptions because we're making a forecast. So because of that disparity between secure income growing at 2% or less, right? Because some of your pension might be zero growth. And then we have your minimum dignity floor growing maybe north of 4%. you can just imagine, even though this isn't visual, right? This is an audio format. You can imagine one is growing faster than the other. And even if your secure income starts covering initially, which we oftentimes see, even for people that just have Social Security, we oftentimes see at age 70, their Social Security alone, if that's their only secure income source, actually covers their minimum dignity floor. But then because that minimum dignity floor in the projections, in our assumptions, is growing faster than that Social Security, in my example, eventually it's going to catch it and then grow above the secure income. We call that point the crossover point. You've probably heard us refer to that in the past. Well, because of the compounded characteristics of that growth rate disparity between the two, the growth and the gap, once that crossover happens, the growth and the gap between the minimum dignity floor projections and the Social Security projections grows oftentimes at 5, 6, 7, 8% per year. Just depends on how far down the road we're looking. So when we're preparing to cover that, you know, we're doing calculations based on, hey, maybe they need extra income starting at about age 82 or so, or maybe 80, but it needs to grow pretty aggressively to keep up with this gap that we're seeing in the assumptions. So you can actually, you know, there's an argument when you look at it the way we're looking at it, that you need to look at it more critically when you're going to generate income to cover an inflating expense. You can't tie it to the inflation of the expense. You need to tie it to the inflation rate of the gap that you're trying to cover, because, you know, some of your income is likely to be flat. If you've got a pension, Social Security might lag if you think of things the way we do. And so you might consider having inflation rates on that income you're adding down the road, 5, 6, 7+%, which having increases each year of that really increases the cost of those annuities, because that if you live long enough, the insurance company is going to be paying you a pretty healthy check.
All right. That's good, Chris, but let's go one step further for those who might be relatively new listeners. We will, as we do an analysis, and you all are doing it yourself, so you're doing this on your own, we go to this length to figure out that growth rate. And again, I cannot stress enough, there is no crystal ball. We feel we're on the target, but we actively concede we're not on the bullseye. And this does require annual or semi-annual updates or regular updates, that's a more broader scope, to your retirement analysis. You just can't do it in 2025 and expect in 2033 it's still good. But what we try to do as people work with us, or you're doing this on your own as a do-it-yourselfer, you're trying to come up with the two dollar amounts for what we call the two most important positions, at least initially. We call them non-negotiable positions or above-the-line positions in the office. That's the verbiage we use. That is the pre-delay period position and the post-delay position. And we're talking post-delay. What we do is once we get that growth rate, we get a quote. And what are we looking for, Chris? What are we trying to do? Because insurance companies, for all their faults, they have a hell of a lot of actuaries, folks. Yeah. And they've spent, in some cases, 100 plus years doing this. They can get fairly accurate on what they want to make a guarantee. Where am I going with this, Chris?
So what we do, once we've got kind of this estimate for that growth rate and the dollar amount for your, you know, the case that we're working on, what we do is actually pull an annuity quote, not again to start convincing someone to buy an annuity, but just to estimate what it would, you know, cost to cover the gap that is being generated by your minimum dignity floor expenses exceeding your existing secure income, which a lot of times is just the Social Security. And so we can actually generate a quote for someone, the anticipated age you might be at the crossover point, and the dollar amount that seems reasonable with the associated growth rate that we have calculated, and we pull a quote. And essentially then we have a target, we have a estimate of, hey, by the time they're 80 years old, they're probably going to need about $500,000 or $800,000 or $200,000 or whatever the number might be, given the circumstances, in order to, at that time, generate more secure income. Now, we are proponents of waiting until you get close to that time to do it, to actually generate it, to give up that lump sum of money to turn it into income instead, because a lot can change. If you're retiring at 65, a lot can change by the time you're 80. May or may not need it at that point. Hopefully medical expenses come down and, or at least don't inflate as fast. And maybe the crossover never occurs. Wouldn't that be a lovely thing? But until we're confident that that's happened, we encourage people to have a reserve. And that's how we define that, you know, figure out that reserve. If you need $500,000 when you're 80 and you're 65 now, we can do some calculations with an assumed, growth rate on that money and figure out how much you might need to set aside today to ensure the 80-year-old has a reasonable amount of money to generate more secure income. So that's how we actually utilize a specific quote from the insurance companies as part of this process, is we first identify the gap size and its growth rate of the gap, and then we fill that gap, at least we hypothetically fill it with an appropriate income annuity, a SPIA, at the age at which we anticipate you need it, and then do a final adjustment to figure out how much you might need to set aside today or the beginning of retirement to be in a good, you know, a confident position you'll have that when you need it.
Great. And a lot of people ask us, we get questions all the time, you know, how do you guys handle inflation as a firm? Well, during this delay period, this is how we handle inflation during the delay period. We don't just randomly choose a dollar amount and say, hey, go out and invest this. We want to do a few things. We want a fairly accurate number. So you can see what we're looking at. We're looking at the actual anticipated growth of your secure income, Social Security, pension, income annuities. We're looking at the anticipated growth of your minimum dignity floor, which is the specific spending task. These assets or position, these assets are going to be asked to cover. Remember, I believe it is what I call spending segmented investing. This particular spending segment is the shortage in your secure income. We also passionately believe in waiting to the last minute to actually buy the annuity. Annuity companies listening to this, if there's any, you probably cringe at that. You'd rather have people buy it earlier. I get that. And if you make your money selling annuities, you probably want people to buy it now. But that's not what we do. We tend to just try to, we always favor flexibility. But we have to be realistic here. And to me, if you monitor this on a regular basis, do you have to monitor it every 6 months? No. Do you have to monitor it every year? Probably not. Every 2 or 3 years? Absolutely. You need to monitor this on a consistent or regular basis and produce a new quote and see what would an insurance company want? How did my secure income grow, if at all? How much did my minimum dignity floor grow? The only way to actually do it is to look at this on a consistent basis. Projecting it long into the future gives us trends, but we specifically begin when we deliver a plan, we go to good lengths, hopefully great lengths. I used to do great lengths when I delivered them. Staff now delivers them. Hopefully they go to good lengths at least, preferably great. Hint, hint. But they go to lengths to explain to people, everything I'm about to show you is wrong, but here's why we still believe in it. The law of large numbers, projections and trends. Those are the things we're truly looking for. We know the accuracy of the number is not on the bullseye. We just want to be on the target. But every couple of years, you got to get it back to the bullseye. You have to. When you hunt, if you're a hunter like I am, I may not sight my rifle. Okay, I sight my rifle in every year. But do you have to? No. Most hunters will truly tell you, you don't have to sight your hunting rifle in every year as long as you didn't drop it or mishandle it. But every couple of years, get that rifle to the range. I sight in, my zone, my 100, my spot on is 100 yards. And then I have a turret and I'll adjust it in the field accordingly. But I will go sight in that 100 yard every couple of years, even if I don't think I made a mistake and dropped the rifle. Well, that's what you got to do here, folks, with your retirement plan. You don't have to do it every year, but every couple of years. Zoom that in, get a new quote, look at the actual experiences of your secure income, your MDF, the shortage, and what an insurance company would want. And then, if your reserve has too much, theoretically, you could take it out. I wouldn't recommend it, but you theoretically could take it out and put it in your fund spending. And for some of you may be willing to take that. But what I'm really looking for is to see, are we not keeping pace? Do we need to add more money? And if so, that comes from your fund. Or from your reserve, we always recommend people have a reserve. You may take some money from the reserve and move it up. And to me, during the delay period, that is the single best way to keep pace with inflation. You're not really keeping pace with it, you're monitoring the risk. You don't have to worry until you turn this income stream on. But prior to that, the flexibility of this position. We talk on the podcast, especially when I bring Junior Jake on, Jacob on, or even Chris, but we'll talk on the podcast that investment positions are etched in jello, not in stone. And this spending reserve is jello. It's not hardened yet. And if you have to take from your reserve to replenish it, you will. Theoretically speaking, if there's a surplus, you could also take it out. And I guess people where they don't have enough fun and they're trying to weigh the two may take some out if the numbers prove to warrant that. But that to me is the critical step during the delay period. Once the income is turned on, theoretically, if you've been keeping pace with this and adjusting, your growth rate shortage has been monitored. The older you, at it's usually 78 to 83, is where we see the crossover point for many people, not all. Some are much longer, some are much sooner. But for many of you, it'll be 78 to 83. Theoretically, there's enough money now in that pool or more. If you've exceeded the need and didn't take it out, you want to throw that extra protection in there, you could theoretically have more than you need. But that is to buy a lifetime stream of income that's going to go up if you so choose to put this money in the annuity. And it's a decision the older you makes, not the younger you. There will be enough to cover, perhaps for the rest of your life, because face it, at 78 to 83, we're not talking 30-year retirement anymore. I guess at 78, you could live to 108. I don't know if you're going to live to 118, but the chances of it being a 30-year retirement is slim to none. Chances of it being a 20-year retirement are greatly diminished. Not impossible, but greatly diminished. You might only be looking at, sadly, another couple of years to maybe 15 years. So it's not a whole hell of a lot of time to worry about inflation. But you, I'm not saying to discount it, but you could have enough money if you so desired to buy an income annuity with that cost of living. Granted, it's static, but whether it's a 2, 3, 4, 5, 6% cost of living adjustment, and then the older you don't have to worry about it or worry about it as much forever. I'm just saying that this is the way we favor it. It's just doesn't mean the way you have to follow it. And again, I'm not downplaying those who want to do this truly with a spending ladder of tips. I just feel it's complex, but also, and I'm glad Chris mentioned it is tied to general CPI, not minimum dignity floor CPR. And if you do a tips ladder, I personally, and there's many smarter people than me out there who will disagree with me, I think you need more than just a tips ladder if you are trying to cover food, utilities, transportation, housing, and healthcare expenses. Keep that in mind. We're going to wrap up there hopefully people are enjoying this. I am. And we clearly are going down rabbit holes. And that's what I like. But we went rather long on this week's EDU show. Chris went on and on. It was incessant.
No, on the Q&A Security show.
Oh, my God. That Q&A. He went so long on some of his answers. Whew. It makes it look like the annuity question that I answered was outrageously long. It wasn't, folks. Mm. If you actually look, it was Chris and his Social Security answers. So we're going to wrap this up now so y'all don't have to listen to another two-hour show. Thank you very much, Chris. And we're going to pick this up next week because there's more to go over and more that we want to share with you. I love articles like this where I can kind of go down some rabbit holes, but get you guys to think of retirement a little bit differently. And inflation, yes, is an ugly monster, but it can be slain. Or at least, maybe not slain, you're never going to be able to kill inflation. But you'll be able to keep that monster in a pretty tight cage. And I think it can be done. And ours is just one of many ways of doing it.
Yeah.
Okay.
I have good news and bad news for you. The bad news, you already know, I missed your birthday.
Yes, chocolate cake and white frosting day. Yeah. I did have a cupcake, though.
You were out of town, though.
Yes,
so
absolutely.
So We didn't do our normal. If you're around, we usually get you some grocery store.
Gift is pocket.
That's the bad news. The good news is I have had a gift in my possession for you for the past several months.
Park it in the driveway, and I'll get it when I come back.
I was going to say, could I do that?
Yes, you can park it in the
driveway. I'm partially joking. I'm not parking anything, but I am totally serious that I have a present that I acquired for you several months ago because I thought, oh my gosh, that is perfect. For Jim.
Chris, you have never, birthday. I've known you for 15 plus years. You have never gotten me a gift for my birthday. So,
correct.
Do you know something about me? Am I going to die and you're getting me a gift?
If you do, I don't know that you're going to. If you do, you will have received at least one very nice birthday present from me. At least I think.
I'm talking it up too much,
but I think you're going to appreciate it.
I'm going to have to announce what this gift was. Now, I'll be back August 7th. I think I'm going to be in the office. I think I got something on the 8th, 9th, or 10th that I have to go in the office for. I forget. Are you going to be in?
8th, 9th, 10th time frame?
I think so. I come back the 7th. What day is the 7th? It's
that's
a Thursday.
Thursday, yeah.
I think I have to be in the office on Friday. I think Joe screwed up and made me go. No, she knows Fridays I don't go in.
Yeah, but I'm around that next week when you're around, yeah.
Yeah, well, I don't know if I'll be in on Friday the 8th, but I will be in the following week.
Yeah.
Friday the 8th, I have an 8 o'clock appointment, but I do that one from home. Yeah.
I'll get you your birthday present that following week.
Okay.
I'm not sure I'm going to wrap it, but that's going too far.
You can't wrap it. You can just put the big bow on top like they do in the commercials.
Maybe I'll stick a bow on it, yeah.
Yeah, but it's got to be at least a 3, 4, 5 foot bow so it covers the entire gift.
Okay. I'll work on that. Well, thanks everybody for listening. We have strung this article out a little bit, but I think it allowed us to kind of share some key thoughts we have on major elements of retirement planning, at least in our philosophy. We will continue this again next week. Jim, you continue to have a good time in Ohio. Everybody else, stay safe, and we'll be back with you next week with a continuation with a brand new show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Salmier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.